Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
From the SportsMap Radio Studios, here's David Gal
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in, everyone. It is great to be here. The boss and the gloss. I'm David Gal, the boss. And next to me, the inimitable Carla Dawson. How are you?
Here with you.
Well, it was a wild NFL weekend. In the same week, we had probably, it was the greatest comeback in NFL history by point spread.
With Minnesota
coming back over the Colts. Colts, who of course had done it long ago. Frank Reich, their former coach, led the Bills to a big victory over the Oilers long ago. And then it was the Vikings over the Colts. Incredible comeback. And then that wild last play, the Raiders defeating the Patriots, an unbelievable turn of events happening in the same weekend.
Well, and also Buffalo over Miami with a last-second field goal in a snowstorm.
All great matchups.
It was a great weekend of football.
I will say, though, I wanted to highlight
you're a Patriot fan.
the regret of the passing of Franco Harris, one of the all-time icons in NFL history. What a great career he had. 4 Super Bowl rings with the Steelers. Just an impressive resume, and perhaps for everything he did on the field, he's noted also for being an exceptional person off the field.
No, absolutely, and we were so fortunate. You and I got to interview him 2 years ago at the Super Bowl, and what a great human. Just kind and wonderful and engaging, and really that's kind of been the narrative that everyone's been talking about him. I mean, besides the Immaculate Reception, which was unbelievable, and this weekend will be the 50th anniversary when the Raiders go to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers.
Yes, and so he was to be honored and yet will not be there, which is one of the great regrets. Franco Harris, amazingly, as a tough football player, always known for running through the middle, running hard, but then having the speed to break away from the rest of the defense. An exceptional person, playing tough on the field. And then he spent a lot of his time off the field after his career running a bakery, of all things. And apparently it was a very renowned, very successful bakery in the heart of Pittsburgh, his own hometown.
He's Italian. He's got that in him. And you know what's crazy? I mean, he died at 72 years old, so young. And the Immaculate Reception was in 1972. I think the football gods are looking down.
A great legacy. All right, when we come back, there is brewing criticism of Bill Belichick, criticism that we've never heard about the iconic coach. We will look at that when we return. Is it justified? That up next here on the SportsMap Radio Network.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
This is Brent Musburger. Happy holidays. Now back to my good friends, David Gao and Carla Dawson. Here's a secret, folks. Carla is the real boss of this operation. Sorry, David.
Wait a minute.
It is Christmas already.
Oh, there's been a call in the building. I'm no longer the boss. Carla has taken over.
That's your Christmas gift from me.
And people are spilling out onto the streets celebrating. Ding dong, the witch is dead. I'm out. Carla's
hey,
in.
Hey.
No, I'm the witch in this case.
Oh, okay.
I'm out.
Just clarifying.
And
there,
Brent Musburger, of all people, giving us that intro. How fabulous to hear from him.
Yeah, we're going to talk to him later.
And we will hear from him next hour. We get a chance to visit with Brent Musburger, who, of course, is on the air with the Vegas Sports Information Network. VSIN, as it's called, is going to be
VSIN in Sin City.
Yeah, he's in Sin City and having a lot of fun. He did tell us that he loves Las Vegas and he loves living there. He's obviously been the broadcaster for the Raiders for a number of years. He's not this year, but has a great presence in that city. And it will be Brent Musburger next hour. Look forward to hearing from him and ask him all kinds of questions. One question I want to hit. If we went to break, we said we'd look at Bill Belichick. I mean, this loss to the Raiders last weekend.
Say it again.
Loss to your beloved Raiders.
Oh, yay.
An exceptional game. I mean,
we don't have many of those as Raider fans, so I've got to soak in it this week.
I mean, you were down to seemingly done, right? You had it looked like the game was over, and Derek Carr threw the pass in the corner
to Keelan Cole
and tied it up on a controversial call. Never mind, it stood.
And after 5 minutes of review, this wasn't a 30-second
review. They gave it a long look. Couldn't overrule the call in the field. And then the play happened, which was so uncharacteristic of a Bill Belichick coach team. The thought that Chandler Jones was going to pick off that pass and run it back for a touchdown. Unbelievable ending.
48-yard return by Jones. I mean, he's finally playing to his contract. Got a big fat one. So it's nice to see that happen for sure.
Yeah, he's had some better games the last few weeks, and none bigger, more pronounced, more notable than what he did on that moment on the final play of the game. And many have said it was the wildest finish of a game since the Immaculate Reception, which ironically we're celebrating the 50-year anniversary of the Immaculate Reception and sadly the passing of Franco Harris this week. But that last...
The Raiders were on the both ends of those. They were the most iconic play in NFL history against them in the Immaculate Reception, and now probably the dumbest play against them at the hands of the Patriots. So at least they got a little retribution here.
Well, I mean, the curious thing was that with about 3 seconds on the clock when that play started, most teams in that spot would either try a Hail Mary, a last shot, throwing all
Take
the way to the end zone, and maybe win on a fluke Hail Mary connection. Although, as it's been reported, the Patriots were concerned that Mac Jones didn't have the arm strength to get it all the way to the end zone. I mean, recognizing that on any Hail Mary, you've got to back up, you've got to get some depth, and then you can wind up and make the big pass. Maybe that was out of Mac Jones's range. So then, why run a play at all? On that draw play, I don't think there was any vision that the draw play was going to go for 50-plus yards. That just isn't in the cards. So they did hand the ball off. And then, of course, all the freelancing happened, and Myers made the ill-fated pass that Chandler Jones intercepted. But the very running of a play calls into question the coaching. Why run the play at all? It sort of goes way back, and most people wouldn't remember, when the Giants and the Eagles played, and there was the fumble, the handoff to Larry Zonka. Why hand the ball off to Larry Zonka at all? That was the Herm Edwards scooping the ball up and taking the Eagles to victory decades ago. Why run the play at all? And Belichick is in the crosshairs of some criticism he's never really had to face.
No, it's very true. And whether, you know, Jacoby Myers is saying, you know, I took that upon myself. You know what? We did that. We called it, you know, audible on the field.
And for the record, it does seem Myers has said that was his own doing.
Right.
Belichick was not calling a Stanford band type lateral play. But he did make the decision to hand the ball off.
Well, and there's some sort of a breakdown that has to start with Belichick, as you are mentioning. You know, in the system somewhere. Like, obviously, why is this even talked about? Why didn't they just take a knee or try a Hail Mary? There's got to be some accountability here. And, you know, I would look to Matt Patricia. I think it's confusing that he's even in as their offensive coordinator because he was the defensive coordinator in New England, he and Josh McDaniels together, before he went as the head coach of the Detroit Lions, which was a disaster. So why would you then bring Patricia back on your staff and put him in an offensive role when you saw it did nothing in Detroit?
Yeah, it has to be the number one mistake by the Patriots this offseason was not getting a strong offensive coordinator to take the place of Josh McDaniels. And I look forward to asking Brent Musburger about that in hour two.
You know what's crazy? The Raiders scored 13 points in less than 35 seconds.
Hmm.
That doesn't happen.
Nope.
Let me tell you, this Raiders team is not capable of doing that this year. They should be. They're not.
Well,
so that was just the craziest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, weeks ago, we thought the Raiders were done, over. There's still a slight possibility. They'll probably have to win out and have some breaks go their way. But there will be in the AFC, there's probably going to be a team with a record of 9-8 that makes it into the playoffs. Raiders now stand at 6-8. So if they win their final three, they would be in the hunt for a playoff.
Where I think that I love your optimism, and I would love to just jump on that train. I think the reality is that the Raiders, this win was so exciting. They are at both ends of the spectrums. They lose really hard.
Yeah, as good this win was, the week before to lose to the Baker Mayfield suddenly arriving in Rams, I mean, that just was bizarre to see.
First of all, Baker Mayfield, who had a 15 QBR coming out of Carolina.
Yep.
had less than 24 hours to look at the Rams playbook. And once again, Las Vegas had a double-digit lead going into the half. I mean, for Josh McDaniels, who worked for under the king of halftime adjustments for his entire career, albeit for the Denver stint, which was a disaster, the guy is the worst halftime adjuster I've ever seen. The Raiders have lost many, many games after the half after double-digit leads. So they had that terrible loss to the Rams. They got blanked by the basement dwellers of the NFC South in New Orleans.
Yep.
Then they lost to the Jeff Saturday coached Colts, who Jeff Saturday took the job on a Wednesday, came out of a broadcast booth, and beat the Raiders. Like, I can't even. So to me, I look at how bad those losses were. The close loss to the Chiefs on Monday Night Football, that was one of their best games was in a loss. That was a great played game. But I can't excuse the three games that we just went over, and I don't see that facing the Steelers, the Chiefs, and a Chargers, I think, coming up. I can't remember what the third game is. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, Raiders not likely to run the table. Yeah. It is a long shot at this point. No. One of the interesting things when you talk about the Rams, and yes, that loss to the Rams will certainly cost the Raiders. If they finish one game out, to lose to Baker Mayfield team, crazy.
Yeah.
However, look, a week later, Baker Mayfield and the Rams looked very, very weak against the Packers. And what I find interesting, now there's all this narrative about the Packers making a run, finishing the season undefeated, the Packers making the playoffs, and all because they beat the Rams. This Rams team is miserable.
Terrible.
They've got Baker Mayfield at quarterback. They've got injuries up and down the field. They're just not the team of last year. They're the Rams in name only. So to celebrate.
So without Andrew Whitworth, which has been a huge loss for them. I think much bigger than they even ever thought.
No, they've struggled on the offensive line with protection all year. Of course, Stafford's out. And so I just find it funny that everyone has been so effusive about the Packers after a win over the Rams. Now talking about the Packers on track, quote, again. Now the Packers are on track again. Here they come. They're going to make the playoffs. Just wait. I mean, that if that happens, I'll shave my head. And nobody
Ooh,
needs
I can't
to
wait
see
to
that.
See
right.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I don't see that happening. I mean, they're third in their division. They're at 6-8. Yes, it could happen, but you know what? I haven't seen anything with the Packers that impresses me. To beat that Rams team, that's not impressive.
One team that has not been impressive the last couple weeks has been the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, man.
So they snuck by the Texans, and then they lost to the Jaguars. And, of course, there are all kinds of howls. Because they are the Cowboys, everyone's highlighting, my gosh, what has happened. It's all about the Cowboys.
I know, this kills you.
But I do think that Jacksonville deserves some credit here. I mean, lost in that win was, for the Jaguars, was the great play of Trevor Lawrence. He was exceptional down the stretch, and he's been pretty good for the last few weeks. And so while everybody's always talking about the Cowboys and the Cowboys lost to the Jaguars, I really feel like shortchanges the work that Doug Peterson has done to get that team on track and to make Trevor Lawrence into the quarterback everyone envisioned he could become. He is on track now. It looks like he's really gotten a rhythm with his team.
He really has. Look at his line from that big win over Dallas. That come from behind win, honestly. 27-42, 318 yards, 4 touchdowns to 1 interception. He's making plays. He's looking more comfortable. You know, now he is questionable against the Jets tomorrow night or Thursday night because of a toe injury. But, I mean, let me tell you, he is progressing along beautifully. And I sadly, because I'm a Raider fan, I heard an interview with him this week that said that Raider game really turned it around for us.
There it was.
The Raiders tend to do that for people. They did it for the Chiefs last year. But, you know, I think you're spot on, David. I think the Dallas loss, what is getting lost in this, is the upcomings of the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. I mean, Doug Peterson is the right coach. And, boy, did he receive a bag of bad goods last year after Urban Meyer tried to sabotage this entire organization. But that pick six by the Jags defense to end the game was really great. You know, Rashawn Jenkins, 2 interceptions on the day. I mean, Jacksonville is looking confident. And frankly, they're catching fire at the right time.
Well, they stand 6-8, so they too are on the fringe of the playoff hunt. But for them, it's really progress, right? And they've won 2 in a row and beat a quality Dallas team last week. So.
And they're in the AFC South. That helps.
Yes, no, they are. And so they sit there at 6-8. They're only a game behind Tennessee at 7-7. So look out for those Jaguars. All right, look out for Brad Kellner. He's coming in to join us in just a second. Brad Kellner is a radio show host in Houston, Texas. He's also been in Austin radio, and we will talk to him about all things NFL and MLB.
Because we got some Correa news to be talking about.
Yeah, Carlos Correa, the former Houston Astro, Brad knows him well, and we'll ask him about Correa's big signing. I also want to talk to him about whom the Texans should take with the number one overall pick. It certainly looks like the Texans are on track.
How about a coach?
To be a coach, a general manager, an owner, but probably a quarterback right. with the number one pick overall.
That's right. A Christmas list for the Texans.
It'll be Brad Kellner here joining us on the Sports Pump Radio Network up next. We'll be right back.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And in studio is the mighty Brad Kellner. He's a show host on KFNC Houston. Brad, welcome into the show. You're on with David and Carla.
How are you guys?
We are good and doing well now that you are here. I would love to ask you, well, we're going to pepper you with questions here. We're excited to unleash you on, well, let's talk about the Texans first because...
Well, that could take a lot of segments. We might have to put a time limit on that.
No question, but I'm excited now. I mean, with the Texans, the only thing to do is look ahead. We don't want to look back. And it looks like the Texans will have the number one overall pick in the draft. They looks like they do need a quarterback. Do you see them going quarterback? And is... Well, amongst the quarterbacks, is there an obvious answer with Bryce Young? Is he the one? How do you see that?
They do need a quarterback, and I do see them going quarterback, number one overall. The Texans not only need a quarterback, guys, they need a face of the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And the easiest way to get that is by drafting a quarterback. So I think it's Bryce Young. I think he's the best in this class. You already see him in commercials every weekend.
His NIL's working hard.
Working very, very hard. It pays to be the quarterback of Alabama. But he's a household name already. He's a really, really talented football player as well. He's won with Bill O'Brien, which is very impressive. I think he deserves some credit.
Despite Bill O'Brien.
Amen. Yes. Okay, I love Brad for that take. Because am I the only one in the country that thinks that Alabama's offense looks a little bitty different with Bill O'Brien behind them?
Yeah, winning a Heisman Trophy with Bill O'Brien, he deserves a statue for that and for that alone.
Brad, we are mano a mano, my friend.
One of the things you may have missed, Brad, is Carla periodically just has to rant about Bill O'Brien. And it's because of his extraordinary tenure in Houston, which was just disastrous. I mean, the decision he made, he really tore down the franchise. For those who didn't really follow the Houston Texans, Bill O'Brien, I think, was the start of the decline of the franchise really going off the rails. And yet he seems to get – lots of guys get resurrected when they go to Alabama and they serve as an offensive coordinator under Nick Saban. And then all of a sudden they get a big head coaching job at some – great collegiate program, and Bill O'Brien will probably not be with Alabama next year. I bet he's going to get some coaching job for the rehab he's done this year.
I call it the Nick Saban coaching car wash, right? You go in dirty, you come out clean on the
other side.
Lane Kiffin, Sarkeesian. I mean, you are – oh, I love that.
The list goes on and on. I know. I'm honored to be here. You know, you guys have been inviting a bunch of other people in the building, and I'm like, am I ever going to get the chance? Ah, thank you. Good save. Good save, Carla.
It's our last show of the year, so, I mean, you bring in the
top mighty Brad. Okay, look, you mentioned Steve Sarkeesian as one of these car wash guys. He's the head coach of the Longhorns. You've got deep history in Austin with the Longhorns. What's your read on Steve Sarkeesian and the job he's done with the Longhorns?
Much better year two than year one. Excited that Arch Manning officially signed today on National Signing Day. I think every Longhorn fan is excited about him. The jury's still out to see if he's the long-term answer, but going from 5 wins in year one to 8 wins in year two, having a chance to maybe make it into the Big 12 championship game at the end of the season, a step in the right direction for Texas. So the defense was a lot better. Still some inconsistencies, of course, but the fact that they won 8 games and all 4 of their losses, including one to Bryce Young in Alabama, came by one possession. They were in all 4 of those games, so
they had Alabama on the ropes. That would have been a big win for the Longhorns.
But you know, I tell you, I think that Alabama, to me, it looks like on the schedule that their loss was truly their best win of the season, honestly, because then they struggled against UTSA and things like that afterwards. But to me, it's really not as impressive as it looked, because you're Steve Sarkeesian. You were the OC that recruited, developed Bryce Young. Most of those people that are still there at Alabama, most of their players, you know the playbook. Like, you should have beat them and beat them handily. You were at home in Austin, And you have the cheat code.
Right.
You were there. So, and I think the same thing against TCU.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I'm frustrated with Sarkisian, because I'm like, you have Gary Patterson on your sideline. He was there for 20 whatever years at TCU. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He knows those players. He knows the playbook, all the things. And you can't beat him.
I couldn't do it.
So this is where – now, to be fair, Brad, I am a USC grad, and so me no like Steve Sarkisian because he caused too much stuff. I didn't like him at Washington. Didn't like that record. So it's just like, why was that the hire? And then we have, of course, the monkey business and all the other things that he brings to it. I don't know. I am a skeptic, but I will listen to you because you're the Longhorn and you can tell me otherwise.
You're right, caller. No, there are plenty of Texas fans who are still skeptical of Steve Sarkisian. There were some who weren't thrilled with the hire at the time. I think most people were drinking the burnt orange Kool-Aid and were like trying to sell themselves on Sark because of how good his offense has looked at Alabama. Well, Alabama's got all of the best players and their offense always looks good. Even with Bill O'Brien, at times it can look
because Nick Saban is the chief.
Because Nick Saban is the chief and he's sort of the cheat code that they have that nobody else has. So, you know, that's the thing. They've got inconsistent quarterback play. With Sark, whether it was at Washington or USC when he was there or Alabama, his quarterbacks always played incredibly well. And they call him a quarterback whisperer or a quarterback guru. And he's developed some really, really good college quarterbacks and some guys who have played well in the NFL too. Texas didn't really get consistent quarterback play. Like in that Alabama game, Quinn Ewers was playing amazing. He gets hurt. Then Alabama comes back to win. And then you're thinking, oh my goodness, if this guy was healthy for all four quarters, Texas wins this game. Well, Quinn Ewers comes back a couple of weeks later. He was in that TCU game.
He was.
And he was terrible.
He was awful. Why not pull him for Hudson Card? Hudson Card is not a scrub.
Exactly. So that's the thing.
That's
the inconsistencies,
decision,
the quarterbacks, the decision-making in some games that we're still, you know, the jury's still out to see what Sark can be long-term. So, yeah, not everyone loved the hire at the time, and not everyone loves the hire through 2 years.
We're talking to the mighty Brad Kellner. He's a show host on KFNC Houston. You can hear him on a show called The Wheelhouse, Afternoon Drives in Houston, Texas on KFNC. So, Brad, you mentioned Arch Manning, so he's now committed to the Longhorns. A big, big get, certainly in terms of name recognition.
And pocketbook, $250,000 weekend. Well, it worked.
Oh, yeah.
They got him.
Uh-huh.
So I, though, had this sneaky suspicion that with that last name, there's a real risk that he might be a little overrated. And the high school where he plays is not a big high school, so he's not facing this kind of five-star type competition. Are there any concerns? Or, I mean, is this, should we just believe because he's the next Manning coming up that this will be another great quarterback?
David, you sound like an A&M fan right now. Or an Oklahoma fan.
Poor Brad. He's getting crucified here.
Full disclosure, my alma mater is Williams College, and our mascot is the Purple Cow. So I can assure you, I have no...
You're safe, Brad. Don't
worry.
I
have no horse in this race, no Longhorn in this race, nothing in this race. But it's funny because I just wonder about Manning. He had all that pedigree, and look, his physically looks gifted and talented, but he's coming from a small high school mm-hmm. to a very big stage with extraordinary expectations.
As a Texas grad, I got to thank your Purple Cows would have beaten A&M this past season. But
that's a fact.
If they lose to Appalachian State, you know, maybe they would lose to y'all too. No, you're right. That's a fair concern. Went up against competition in Louisiana. The competition in Louisiana has gotten better over the years, but he was at a small private high school mm-hmm. called Isidore Newman that doesn't face a lot of the best competition. If you come up through, you know, Galena Park North Shore, you're in Texas 6A high school football, you're going up against the best of the best every single Friday night. That wasn't the case for Arch Manning in Louisiana. And I think the name also carries some weight, too. It carries some added pressure, being a Manning mm-hmm. for him. But it also definitely helps in terms of the hype train and people trying
and the recruiting
to build you
domino.
Up. Absolutely. Absolutely. So
that domino is a big value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other recruits want to be on this train that he's creating.
Definitely. He committed to Texas a few months ago. And right after he committed, you just saw a bunch of big-name players from all over the country, especially wide receivers who want to catch passes from Arch Manning in college, starting to commit to UT as well. So, yeah, a lot of pressure. Some questions with any of these guys. Whether you're from a big school or small school, we see five stars all of the time, especially at the quarterback position, struggle to take their games to the next level. It's wild. In the transfer portal era, 50% of 4- and 5-star quarterbacks end up transferring. You don't transfer if you're a super great player usually. Now, Caleb Williams, Carla, you're a guy now.
Right.
There are separate circumstances where a coach leaves, you follow the coach. But a lot of these 5-star quarterbacks, whether they're Mannings or Joe Schmoes, they don't pan out at the college level. So we'll see.
Well, look at JT Daniels.
Exactly.
Ooh, we might have to touch on that when we come back. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. We've got Brad Kellner in studio with us. You can hear him on the Wheelhouse on KFNC Afternoon Drive. He's going to come back next segment. And I do want to ask him about the signing of Carlos Correa. Was that an overpay? Very intriguing Correa signing with the Mets. That'll be up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we are joined in studio by Brad Kellner, the mighty Brad Kellner. You can hear him on the Wheelhouse, KFNC Houston. He also goes by the title of Houston's most eligible bachelor. Now, Carla, you're a woman who has good taste in men.
Thank you.
I mean, that's why you
look who I'm in the room
do
with.
Do a show with me, of course. Brad Kellner, is he a really enticing bachelor about town in Houston, Texas?
Girls, listen up. What? This is no face for radio. This is a TV man right here.
He's got a face for television.
He does.
Light him up. Go to find him on social media. Where are they going to find you on social media, all these women who want to see you?
At Brad Kellner. Y'all are lying. It's not nice to lie to your listeners, but I do appreciate the kind words. Thank y'all very much.
See, humility is a gift. Girls, humility. Oh. This is so nice.
There
I'm
he is.
Telling you.
Goodness. There he is. Too yeah. good to be true. All right, Wild Thing. Let's move on from that.
Wild Thing. I think I love you.
Okay. Now, well, the room's getting a little hot
right.
in here.
So starting to blush over here. Goodness.
All Look, right. Sean left the booth. We've yeah. upset him.
People
can't
are
be
running.
Uh-huh.
All right.
He's like, what about my hair?
I want to go back to the Carlos Correa signing. Late in the dark of the night.
Whoa.
He did not sign with the Giants. He's gone to the Mets. And the Mets have paid him a pretty penny with a long-term deal. Did they overspend? And how did this come down?
What a situation.
It's amazing.
I woke up to a text from one of my co-hosts on KFNC, Jake, thinking, and he says, oh, Carlos Correa signed with the Mets in the middle of the night.
And you're thinking he's joking.
Good one. He's a prankster. He does this a lot. He's making this up. What are you talking about? Carlos Correa signed with the Giants last week. How could he be signing with the Mets? He just signed with San Francisco. And then I open up Twitter, and sure enough, that's what happened. So you heard some rumors yesterday. When they postpone the presser about a failed physical. And when that happens, sometimes deals don't get done. And Scott Boras, who is Carlos Correa's agent, he's known for not renegotiating. Like, he'll negotiate a deal with you one time, and if you get cold feet, if you back out for any reason, he's done. He's taken his business somewhere else. And then, obviously, in the middle of the night, Carlos Correa ends up with the Mets. So it's actually less money than what he got from San Francisco, so maybe hard to call it an overpay, but the Mets owner, Steve Cohen, is the richest owner in all of baseball. He doesn't care about overpaying.
Do you know what? With this $806 million that Steve Cohen has spent in the offseason, it is the most expensive sports team in North America.
How about that?
It's not even Major League Baseball. In North America. And they're going to pay, projected, if this Correa thing goes through, physical pending, which it probably will, over $111 million in luxury tax. I mean, he's got the cash. So I'm sure he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Brad, what I want to ask you is this. When I woke up to the same text this morning from my brother saying, what's going on? And he's out in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And I said, when I saw the physical situation yesterday, I was like, interesting, because I know each team can do their own. The physical is not like a man, you know, it's not a set deal.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the Giants and I think this is a smart organization for the most part. And I think they did a really rigorous physical because that's a big, fat, historical deal of 13 years, $350 million.
Sure.
Scott Boras, to me, who seems like, I mean, he's not going to leave a penny on the table, just left $40 million on the table and 1 year less to go to the Mets. To me, that signals, and please, I want to get your take on it. It signaled to me, Scott Boras is like, this deal's in peril with San Francisco. It's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So is it in peril because San Francisco got cold feet? Or is it in peril because they really saw something and Boras was like, crud, this isn't going to go through for this kind of money and length?
Perhaps a combination of both, right? I think it's more of the former. I think it's more of a cold feet type of situation.
Really?
The Giants were in on Aaron Judge, who's a better player than Carlos Correa. And they thought they had him. There were tweets saying the Giants had agreed to a deal with Aaron Judge. And then, of course, he ends up going back to the Yankees.
At the last minute.
And I think San Francisco's like, okay, now we have to do something. They panicked, and they had all this money ready to spend, and they needed a face of the franchise, and the offseason was going, and a lot of the big-name players had already signed elsewhere, so they were running out of options. And then I think that they thought that, okay, let's go get Carlos Correa. He's the biggest name out there. He's won a championship before. Let's go get this guy. And then I think there was a little bit of buyer's remorse. And maybe there was something actually wrong with the physical. I mean, Carlos does have some injury history, so reason to believe that something could have popped up. But part of me thinks that there's a chance the Giants sort of made it up a little bit and used it as an excuse to not go through with this contract because, like you asked, Carla, I think they got cold feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, wow. Look, Correa is 28 years old. He was on the cusp of signing a 13-year contract, so that would have taken him to age 41.
And I would do extra due diligence on that, too.
So, yes, they better be doing their homework. Giants. Mets, though, pretty grand commitment, 12-year deal for taking Correa to 40 years old at a total contract value of $315 million. Mets are in a spot where they really need to win and win now. Given that commitment from ownership, it would be a huge disappointment if they don't go deep into the playoffs.
Absolutely. You know, when I first saw this, I thought this was like a Kaiser Soze situation from Usual Suspects. You know, and he has the limp throughout the entire movie. Then he walks out of the police station, and he's perfectly fine.
That's a great
analogy. Like Carlos maybe faked something so he could go to the Mets because he knows they have a better chance of winning. But you're absolutely right. The Mets are probably going to become the Vegas favorites to win the World Series next year. I know the Astros just won it. I know the Dodgers are really good, but because of the money the Mets have spent so far, and we're talking about a team that won 101 games last year.
Right.
So this is not like a 70-win team like the Rangers a couple of years ago, right? They spent a bunch of money last offseason, but they weren't very good, so you didn't expect them to be super good right away. The Mets were a great team a season ago, and they added all of these incredibly talented players. So you're absolutely right, David. This will be a World Series or bust type of year for the Mets, and it's going to be that way for the foreseeable future if you continue to spend.
And what do you think, Brad? So Francisco Lindor, he's the one who set the market for the shortstops, you know, a la Steve Cohen in 2020 when they signed him to a 12-year, I think, $340 million deal. He's the shortstop. So Correa, I would assume, is going to move to third probably at this point. And they were teammates together on the Puerto Rican team, I know, and really like each other, and that's all great. Two questions. One, what does that do to the locker room? Like, you're bringing in a second shortstop, but you're moving him to third. What happens to the guy at third? I mean, just kind of interesting.
Sure.
And then two, is it a big move? Like, how is Correa going to do going from short? I know that Bregman made the move coming out of college, but he started in MLB moving from shortstop to third. What does this do to Correa's production, especially defensively?
Both great questions. I think the Mets locker room will be fine. Okay. They view this as a winning move, and everyone in that locker room wants to win. And when you add a player as good as Carlos Correa, how can you not be excited about having that guy, not only with his talent, but also with his postseason pedigree as well? He's one of the clutchest players in the history of Major League Baseball with the runs he had with the Astros. And then for the second question, I think Carlos will be fine. He can handle the pressure. There's been a spotlight on him since the moment he was drafted because he was the number one overall pick. Then playing shortstop, all those postseason runs, then the cheating scandal, he gets booed everywhere he goes and still succeeds and gets it done in October. So I don't think the pressure, like with Justin Verlander, I'm a little bit more nervous about him because in the postseason he hasn't always been his best. Carlos Correa in the postseason in big moments has always been really good. There's no market in the world like the New York market, but I think Carlos Correa will be able to handle the fans and the pressure that goes into playing up there. So I think he's going to be as good as he has been for most of his career. I really do.
All right, I like it.
Fascinating to watch. I mean, Justin Verlander is a great addition to that staff as well. He had an amazing season with the Astros. Now, he's 39 years old, so again, they're counting on people staying healthy for a long time to make the contract worthwhile. But you see Verlander fitting into the Mets pretty well?
I do. I really do. It's a retirement home with that starting rotation. I feel like those guys need life alerts when they go on the mound, him and Max Scherzer, both of them being the ages that they are. But
and they're not fans of each other too much.
Right, right. They've got some history. They've got some history with each other. So I think JV will be a great addition. But for the Mets, they care about winning the World Series. So Verlander did get his first World Series win out of the way for the Astros a couple of months ago. So he's got that monkey off his back, and maybe he'll be coasting in the postseason from here on out. But he hasn't always been great in his playoff career, so there will be some pressure on him to get it done in October.
Brad, let me ask you about the Astros offseason, which has been interesting with, you know, firing James Click right after they won the World Series and everything else. But I look and I see that Jim Crane's getting a lot of criticism because there's not been any big fat signings, honestly. But you look at this. Garrett Cole was gone. Mm-hmm. What did we do? go to the World Series. George Springer leaves. What do? Go to the World Series. Carlos Correa leaves. What do? We win the World Series. Next man up, Jeremy Peña. Like, who saw that coming? So do you trust what the Astros are doing in the offseason? And then how do you look at with the signing, the Yankee signing of Rodon? How do you look at, and the departure of JV here in Houston? Mm-hmm. How do you look at those? Do you think there's been a shift of power in the AL?
I don't. I still think the Astros are the favorites in the American League. You know, the James Click situation is a weird one. It's pretty unprecedented to see a GM lose his job basically days after his team won the World Series. So I would have brought James Click back, but Jim Crane has been the one constant for the Astros. They've had multiple GMs. They've had multiple managers. They've obviously had dozens of players. The one guy who's always been there through this dynastic run that they've been on is Jim Crane. So I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt from Astros fans that, hey, whatever he does, he's kind of got the Midas touch. It's going to find a way to work. So I feel good about it. And because the Astros swept their way through the American League playoffs, I still think they're the favorite. They didn't have to do a whole lot this offseason because they were the best team in baseball last year. They had 19 of their 26 players from that World Series roster already under contract in 2023. And then they did go get Jose Abreu, too, who I think will make them even better. So they didn't have to have the splashiest offseason. They could kind of puff their chest out a little bit and say, we're the best. And if you want to beat us, you got to actually take us down. So not as splashy, not as many headlines, but I think Houston is still the favorites in the AL.
Love it.
We're talking with Brad Kellner, radio show host on KFNC Houston. You can hear him on the Wheelhouse Afternoon Drive in Houston. Now, they did bring the Astros did bring back Michael Brantley. Do you like that signing and his return?
I do. He's well-liked and respected in that clubhouse, and he was having a really good year before he went down with injury. So, perfect platoon guy with Yordan Alvarez in left field. One of those guys will play the field. One of those guys will be DH. And Brantley is one of the most negatively impacted players by the shift in all of baseball. So the shift going away in 2023, there's reason to believe, even coming off of the injury, that Michael Brantley could actually be more productive, which is great news for an Astros fan.
All right.
Fascinating. All right, we've got just a couple minutes left. I got one other Houston team I want to ask you about. The Rockets have shown some sign of life, some youth talent on that team. How do you feel about the Rockets today?
Yes, sir. Well, they're getting better. They're getting better. They lost to the Spurs a couple of nights ago. Which,
the 2-9 winners going at it.
Exactly. Like, it's tough to compare any coach to Greg Popovich because he's one of the best to ever do it. But I think you notice when those two teams play each other, and they did twice in a two-week span, that hey, coaching matters a little bit. So Steven Silas has done a pretty good job, but I don't know if he's the right guy long term. We'll probably find out that answer the rest of the season. But you know, it's nice to see Jalen Green developing. Jabari Smith, the rookie top three pick, is getting more and more comfortable. So it's a young team in the midst of a long rebuild. They've got some pieces, but still a ways to go before they're super competitive.
Yeah, it's all relative to expectations, right? There's no expectations the Rockets are going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's really about seeing these young guys develop. And those two stars you mentioned that taken with the high draft picks, you'd like to believe that they're going to be the foundation for the future for a long time.
Definitely. And that's what this year was all about for the Rockets, is finding those foundational pieces. So I think Jalen Green is obviously one right now. Jabari Smith could become one. Alperen Şengün could become one as well. But that's it. It's a star-driven league. And if you don't have stars, you don't have a chance. So the Rockets are looking for them.
It really is.
All right, he is Brad Kellner. Listen to him on KFNT Houston, The Wheelhouse. You've also heard he's Houston's most eligible bachelor.
And he is cute, girls.
And,
get it going.
And you heard it from the gloss. He's hottie, apparently. So keep that in mind. They can find you at Brad Kellner.
That's it.
Pretty simple. Two L's in Kellner.
I was going to say, I'll sound like my parents, but I don't think my dad would use the word hottie. So.
If he did, I want to meet him. This is funny.
That's because I learned these words from Carla. She's my bad influence here. Brad, really appreciate your coming in. Really, and when to all our listeners, when we come back, what we're going to do is talk about Brad behind his back and everything that he said. So be sure to
we're
listen
We're giving
for
out
that.
Numbers for the lucky listeners.
Yeah, we'll be giving away a free
the
date
digits.
With
we
Brad
got Brad's
Kellner.
Digits.
All kinds of possibilities. That up next year when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it was great to have Brad Kellner in studio with us. And I was struck by several things he said, but one of them was he used language I hadn't heard, but we've been saying, which is that these coaches who have struggled, then who have, quote, in his words, get dirty, they go to the car wash. that is the Nick Saban Alabama football program, and they get cleaned up, and then they get to go and get another good job. And, of course, there are so many of these guys.
Come in dirty, leave out clean.
And yeah. Bill O'Brien, Steve Sarkisian, go on Lane Kiffin all the way back. And this is what I think is happening to Bill O'Brien. But, Kellner, I like that language you used, the car wash opportunity that Nick Saban provides these guys. And then the other thing was intriguing to hear. He really feels good about the Carlos Correa signing for the Mets and what that means for the Mets. I mean, the Mets are stocked to have Lindor at shortstop and move Correa over to third. There's no question there's talent on that team.
Oh, gosh. And then you've got Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer on the mound. I mean, it is really...
Quintana, it's an incredible staff.
I mean, they spent $806 million in the offseason.
It's interesting because Steve Cohen's getting a lot of criticism for spending and spending too much and maybe tipping the balance of play out of whack. Look, the luxury tax is supposed to prevent it. In Steve Cohen's case, it did not. Of course, most fans, most of the time, are complaining that their owners aren't spending enough because the fans all want players. But I guess what we're doing here as fans is looking at this one team that is such an outlier. And if you're not a fan of the Mets, this is not a good day because the Mets are really trying to stack the deck in their favor.
Well, and you know, you remember when Steve Cohen wanted to buy the Mets, the owners were reluctant to vote him in because of this very reason, because he has unlimited resources, really.
Right.
And they were afraid that he would set the market, and sure enough, he has. I mean, the Mets, pending this Correa deal going through, again, they've signed $106 million in contracts this offseason, will be the most expensive team in North American sports.
Unbelievable step.
Wow. And you're a Dallas Cowboy fan. Not saying a lot.
That's right. All right, that's hour number one of the books. Great to have you listening. We will be right back. You've been listening to The Boss and The Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.